You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Ten after 9 o'clock on the West Coast. 10 after 11 o'clock in Texas, where everything is better. Joining us is one of the smartest guys I know, Mike Musselman. What's up, Gunner?
Because you only know two other people.
Exactly. Smartest guy. Hey, the smartest guy in a group of dumb guys is still the smartest guy, though. Think about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
That's right.
All right. So, I just got back from Volgograd, Russia.
Yeah? Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, just flew in. Just flew right in. The game just got over with, and I just got back.
Okay, so what do you have to report? Make it smart. World Cup. Talk to me.
Okay, so two games played today. Winner's bracket, loser bracket. Winner bracket, Russia versus Uruguay. Uruguay took them to the carpet, man. I mean, they taught Russia a new thing about team sports. They lost, ultimately lost 3-0. Russia did, and
I thought it was 3-0. I thought it was 3-0.
Well, I was speaking for you Americans.
So
they don't understand football.
You weren't speaking like football language. You were speaking to us in our own our own native tongue. All right, I appreciate that.
Right, I don't want people calling in saying, "What did the Gunner say?" What's a nil? And then we got to go down the road of what a nil is.
Right, what a nil. Okay. All right, you know what? I appreciate that. That's unselfish. I like that.
Yeah. That's the way I think, Mac. Uh-huh. Anyway, Igor Samolskovich, whatever his name is, Russian guy, got a red card, which you get ejected from the game. And the unique thing about red cards in World Cup soccer like that is they don't get to replace them. So 11 men on the field, you get a red card, you're down a man. You don't get to replace them, you're down.
What do you do to be red card?
Hockey penalty lasts the whole game.
Right.
It was a second yellow card, so he got a warning on basically clearing the ball. He interference, you know, so he got in there. But what happened was he was getting beat on the outside corner. He was playing right midfielder.
Right.
The guy that, Uruguayan guy that was playing left midfielder, attacking him, was a lot faster than he was. So ultimately when he did a slide tackle to try and clear the ball away from him, and so a slide tackle, as long as you make contact with the ball first and you clear the ball away, and if the player goes down after that, oh well. But when you go after the player to clear the ball, you can get ejected from the game. Or in this case, he got a warning, a yellow card, for doing that. And then ultimately, a few minutes later, about 5-10 minutes later, he did it again. He went after the player because he was getting beat, man. He was just getting beat on that end around.
So
tackled the guy.
It's like in hockey when you're getting beat and you dive. As long as your stick makes contact with the puck first, if you get the guy's skates after that, it's not a penalty. But if you get his skates first and then the puck, then it's a penalty. But in this case, so explain ejected. So if you get two red cards in a game, you're ejected?
Two yellow
cards in a game
equals a red. Two yellows equal red, and you're out. You're out of the game. And now they're going to have to play a man down. They played a man down for this, so the next series, they'll play a man down because they still have that red card over there on him.
What do you mean? It carries over to the next game? That's bullshit.
Well, that's just the way it works, man.
They don't like rough play in soccer. So how do they have to play for the whole next game, a man down, or just the amount of time that it has to be 60? What do they play? 90 minutes. So whatever the balance, does it all add up to 90, or is it the whole next game?
I'm not sure on that.
I thought you were an expert.
I know that red card's throwing me. No, I was. I'm somewhat of an expert. When it comes to me and you, I'm an expert.
When it comes to you and football,
me, you and
Ian,
Cristiano
and Ian
Ronaldo, yeah, then he's the expert.
Okay, so is that the number one game? Well, truth be told,
that was the number one game this week.
Uruguay,
so that's Group A.
Uruguay is supposed to be one of the contenders for to ultimately win.
Yeah, Uruguay stepped their crap together, man. They were hooking on all cylinders, dude.
And where'd they play the game?
There's two games. Now they're playing in both stadiums. They're playing like in Volgograd and I don't remember where the other two places in Russia. Everything's in Russia. I don't remember where the second game was played, but they're close proximity. One's a smaller stadium, only houses 45,000 people.
As opposed to the 80,000 we're used to.
Yeah, but today, so Group A played today.
Okay.
And then Group B plays tomorrow. But the second game in Group A today was Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Now, that was a tied game all the way up into regulation time. So the way football works is there's two halves, 45-minute halves, right? And then they have halftime. So a total game play is a 90-minute regulation game. Unique thing about football, FIFA, you know, World Cup football, is that the clock always continues to go. So on injuries or time things, the clock is still running. What happens is, the referee maintains the time asker. So all of that time is then made up after regulation. So what will happen is, let's say they tally up all those seconds and it comes to 4 minutes. Then they add 4 more minutes to play. So total time played is 94 minutes. When the whistle blows, you don't know if it's 4 minutes and 1 second or 4 minutes and 59 seconds. You just know it's 4 minutes. So what happened was regulation ended, second we're playing it. So then I think they added 4 minutes to the Saudi-Egypt game based on, again, time. They were at 93 minutes. And 58 seconds. So, again, the game could end right at 94 minutes or 94:59. You know, it's just a guess.
Right.
Only the referee knows.
Well, you know what? That's stupid because the referee's got a headset on. He could say, put 4:59 up, boys. And then he may have to stop it in overtime, and we're not going to update it. But come on.
But, no, it's just a guess to me. I like that because you don't
hear. Oh, it's a mystery?
What does it end? Yeah. Oh, God. So what happened was, Saudi Arabia charged and scored a goal.
What?
In like three, yeah, at 94:03, I think it was on the clock. And then as soon as they reviewed it to make sure it wasn't offside, they gave them the goal. So Saudi is now 2-1 on Egypt. They go to do the kickoff in the center, and as soon as they touch the ball, the game's over.
I mean, oh,
he literally
no
had
way.
A second, dude. Yeah, a second.
And what happened? Did the Egyptians riot and go crazy? Because that's Egypt. So explain to me the drama around Egypt. The drama around Egypt is some player named Salah, one of the best players in the world, but he's hurt.
Yeah, he's not. He actually scored a goal, Mohamed Salah.
And was gonna Mohamed? I spell Mike Oscar Hotel uniform. Mike Alpha Delta. I could do that in my sleep, man.
Yeah.
What's his name? Anyway. So what's his problem? What's the deal? I read that he was going to lead the team, and he's like the man for Egypt, and now Egypt goes down to Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia doesn't play football. They produce oil.
Yeah.
Although they just let the women drive. So got that going for them.
Yeah.
A lot more car crashes.
Salah scored their only goal today for Egypt.
Oh, really? Let me ask you a hypothetical, okay? You're a guy driving in Saudi Arabia. You're 55 years old, and you're going through, you know, you're going on a circle, and somebody doesn't give way and smashes right into you. You get out, and it's a woman driving for the fourth day in Saudi Arabia. What do you say?
Let me ask you one question. Did I bring my basket of stony stones?
No, you don't have any stony stones handy. Then there's none by the side of the road. It's all grass.
There's not a stony,
and garden. No,
not
no
a stony stone vendor.
No stony stone vendor. Only sand. Only sand in Saudi Arabia. No stones.
Ah, what about a stoning stone stoning machine?
No, there's no stoning stones.
Well, I would then probably, God, no stoning stones. This is a tough one, man.
Right now.
And no stoning stone vendors or no stoning stone vending machines. Not any feral stones laying on the side of the street.
No, there's no feral stones. Can you, Mike, can you imagine the meltdown, right?
As dude, like, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
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 I would, well, first of all, this is kind of a crazy question, because if I'm a shoddy man at 55, I would never depart my house without my basket of stoning stones.
So you'd be prepared. Okay, stoning stones, so everybody who understands, it's listening, are for you to stone people, okay?
Women. Yeah. Mostly women.
Mostly women. You know, so they would do commit some transgression, like maybe walking out of their house unaccompanied by a man, or maybe talking to a man on a cell phone. Those things are crimes against humanity, and you should be killed for them. And they are. Stoned.
Well, yeah, and that's why stoning stone vending machines are very popular in those countries.
Stop. There's the blue sign. There's the machine. Let's go. The yeah, that's going on in Saudi. But the Kingdom's never had a good football team. They got smoked by Russia 5-0.
Yeah, I know. But so then, yeah, but Russia lost today. Like I said, old Mr. Igor Somaksky Somotov, who got ejected from the game. You know, his poor family just is going into hiding if they're not already, you know, not walking on this. They're dearly departed. The whole entire family's gone. You know, Russia doesn't play around, man. You know, the national team's going to go see Vladimir at the Kremlin, and they're going to be all that. And it's going to be, hey, Igor, come here a second. We forgive you. Come here. You know? And then he's going to get in on there, and then it's going to be bam in the back of the head, and he's going to look at them all and go, I forgive nothing. Yes, Mr. Putin. Yes, Mr. Putin.
All right, here's another email. Did the Gunner ever play soccer? Did you play soccer?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I played it for a long time.
In high school and stuff like that growing up?
Yeah, and then when I was in the Marine Corps, and then when I moved to England, I played
football.
European soccer.
Sounds more legit when it's called football. I don't know why.
Well, because you use your feet. Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, not to us, though. You know, we're different. We're different.
Yeah. And the field, the pitch, as they call it.
The pitch.
In Europe.
Yeah.
Is much bigger than the American soccer field. Much bigger.
You know, what's pretty amazing is when you watch big-time European soccer, and their, what do they call their top league? I don't even know what it's called.
Where? In Europe?
Yeah, in Europe. What's where, you know, where Messi plays in, Ronaldo
plays in? Oh, I just know it's UEFA, it's UEFA,
but
United European Football Association.
Yeah, you see those guys go. So you see the World Cup, and it's, you know, it's good, you know, it's good soccer. But when you watch, you take the number of guys playing in the world, it's like the Olympics. Okay. You have all those Olympic hockey teams, and now you're going to reduce, you know, get the guys out of there that don't belong, and you're going to throw the professionals in there, and the skill level goes, and you watch those guys move the ball. Even that big field doesn't look that big anymore when those guys are playing. It's pretty, pretty impressive. I watched it in Iraq, and I had never watched that much soccer, and I was impressed by the skill level, the speed of the game. It looks a lot like hockey. And when you see them playing in that elite league where those guys can legitimately play, and there's a bunch of them, it's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Another email question. Mac, ask the Gunner about his solution. Okay, I'm going to ask you a serious question. I want a serious answer. I know. I want a serious answer. So, what do we do? Is there anything we can do about the immigration situation? The law says you can only hold kids for 20 days, right, if their parents are being charged. So the parents and kids are separated. Kids are put someplace else. Legally, there's nothing else we can do other than catch and release. Yes? I mean,
right.
There isn't, is there?
Well,
I mean, we can try
I
to.
Mean,
until Congress changes the law, right, there's legally nothing you can do.
Right. I mean, so we'll return them back to their native land, yeah.
Yeah, but they, you know, this is to me what's crazy, and the president was talking about this morning, is that so you walk, you try to sneak into our country, and you get your day in court? That's what you get? That's what you're entitled to. And so everybody who tries to sneak into the country gets their day in court, even if it takes, you know, even if it takes 7 months? Yes. And the answer to that is yes. It's the craziest, thing you've ever heard. And so how do we remedy it? Oh, we need a whole bunch of immigration judges down there so they can go through these cases in a heartbeat. Who has to fix that? Well, Congress. Oh, I'm out. That's right, you're out. They're not going to do it. And they put their heads on the pillow and sleep at night with that system in place, knowing that, and Mike, this reminds me of the ROE games we used to play with bad guys in Iraq and Afghanistan. They know the rules probably better than we do, okay? And so,
right. So
catch and release is the only thing you can do.
Right.
That's our system. If you're traveling with a minor, and then the cherry on top of the whole thing is 97% do not show up for their court hearings, which means that if they had a legitimate asylum claim, they'd show up and become legitimate citizens. So by virtue of them not showing up, what does that tell you? If it's bullshit to start with.
Yeah, they had a bullshit claim.
Right. And we don't fix that. And you as a politician could put your head on your pillow at night and go to sleep thinking that you've lived up to that oath that you took. It's sick. It's, in my opinion.
Yeah, by not doing nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And I don't know. So, yeah, but I would tell you, the president, until somebody does something, either until that judge changes that ruling to say that you can hold these people in for 90 days as a family unit in some camp, but if their case isn't heard within 90 days, then you have to go to catch and release or something. And then it's going to be get all these immigration judges down there. And what do you have to know? What am I going to hear from this person? They get it. Do we pay for a lawyer? I would imagine we do. They got to go to court. So you have all these immigration lawyers. Musselman. Well, this isn't really his kid. This isn't really his wife. Okay.
Well, the crazy thing about it, even in these shitty third world countries, if you cross into their borders illegally, you know, people don't understand. We treat people humanely when it comes to this. And, you know, people are like, oh, no, when you look at other countries and how they treat people that cross borders illegally, you know, there's no comparison.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and try to sneak into another country and then start claiming your rights.
Yeah, watch how fast that happens. Where your rights go, they go right down your face, in your face.
Yeah,
in the form of the rights glove. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get a rifle butt smashed into your face.
Your rights.
There's your rights. Would you like to?
You have the right to be beat up, the right to be starved, the right to be treated, you know, like an animal.
You have the right to be raped. All of that.
Yeah.
Any other questions about your rights? But it's what we do on the border. What we do on the border is crazy. It's crazy. What we do in Washington D.C. is even crazier because they're content with that system. Hold on, I got an email. Reaper, correction: the MQ-9 Reaper drops bombs, not shoots them. It shoots Hellfires.
That was from earlier when you said that the Reaper shoots bombs.
Yeah, but who would write some like snarky email? Like doing verbiage correction on how a piece of ordnance comes off a rail.
Some weapons employment officer, probably, is my guess.
Some jackass. Are you a fan of the Reaper? Are you a fan of the drone? Are you a drone guy?
Yeah, we tried to buy one when I was in the division. We went up to a place in Northern California that actually manufactures them and tests them. And we wanted to buy them for the Marine Corps to deploy them to, like, Syria, or no, Oman, when we were going to Oman, you know, to give to that rifle battalion to have their own, because, you know, you're talking, when it comes to Reapers and stuff like that, that's the national asset. You know, so trying to getting
explain what that means, national asset. Of course it is. It belongs to the government. Of course it's a national asset. What does national asset mean?
Well, it's just a higher degree of employment. So people, there's a, you know, a group of individuals that sits on top of that deciding where those things go. Those assets will go. They don't go to your down to the rifle company type of guys. You know. So they, or if they do, they get very limited amount of time. And it's usually not the window that they need. So we wanted our own. And when we were going down that road, we were meeting a lot of pushback from the United States Air Force, because that's who controls them. So it's
the ability to have control over its employment. It really is the issue. So a national issue we would share with other ones with competing priorities, our own bird that we would take, we would own it, we would employ it. Nobody else gets a say in it.
Right. It goes to the guy that we believe needs it the most.
We like that. When you have to share, it sucks. Again, I don't know what has taken the American military so long. We drove our fixed-wing aviation assets into the ground over there, doing stuff that a lot of it could have been done by ISR platforms for a lot cheaper. We broke right. The aviation community because, and you know what? A lot of it, though, is the fault of the aviation community because they're very reluctant to have non-piloted assets take over jobs.
Right.
What happens to the volleyball
game? Yeah, we did that to ourselves.
Yeah. What happens to the volleyball game? Who's going to play in the volleyball game? The geek drivers with man breasts? It's hardly going to be the homoerotic event it was in Top Gun. But nonetheless, that's who's going to be there.
Right.
The Matt, gun question.
Uh-oh.
Why do people soft barrels on shotguns other than to rob 7-Elevens? Yeah, is there what is the ballistic? How do you change the shotgun ballistically when you saw the barrel off? Is there any
spreads
quicker?
The shotgun spread. Okay. Yeah, it spreads quicker.
All right. And so is it just you turned that into a close quarters self-defense weapon or what?
Yeah, it's just much easier to conceal, much easier to employ, and smaller. You know, a lot less range, but.
So you wouldn't be, if you were doing that, you wouldn't really be too worried about range. It would be for close in. And you would saw it off simply to get through doorways and stuff like that, or probably to hide it, right? One of those two?
Hide it, mostly, hide it. Yeah.
Hide it. All right. The sawed off shotgun sounds pretty bitching, doesn't it, though?
Yeah, they've always been, like, everybody always talks, you know, oh, I like a sawed-off shotgun. Why?
Because it sounds cool, right?
Yeah, for what purpose? What purpose would it serve that a normal shotgun wouldn't?
What purpose would it serve?
You don't think sawed-off shotgun duck hunting. No, that's what it says. Concealed. It's concealment.
Okay, what about room clearing? Sawed-off shotgun or rifle?
Rifle.
Why?
Well, because the shotgun, you know, even the really nice ones would hold only about 8 rounds. So I'd rather have a rifle that holds 30 or more. So you're looking at, you know, I want stuff that's going to penetrate. I mean, shotgun's going to penetrate, but I want range and close quarter. So small rifle.
Here's another question. Mac, I listened to that little clip of Jeremiah Workman. You mentioned that Mike introduced you to Jeremiah 2 years ago when you had him on the program. Where did the Gunner meet Jeremiah? So where'd you
meet? 3-5.
3-5. So yeah, you're the battalion gunner, and he's in the 81 section?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Jeremiah was in 3-5.
Okay, so he comes back, and you join the unit, and then he goes to the drill field shortly thereafter? Is that the part of his career?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. No, it's one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. Because of his candidness and willing to share his experience. I listened to it on Saturday, I think, part of it, because I sent a part to somebody. And I just, as I sat there and listened to it, I was like, what a great guy that will share that kind of experience with you, to help other people. And, everybody's cool as you talked about when you mentioned, hey, do you know Jeremiah Workman? And I said, no, I don't. I said, I've heard of him. Why do I know the name? And Mike said, he's a recipient of the Navy Cross. And he said, you should have him on the program. And Jeremiah's awesome. 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 Awesome.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah. No, he is. And the interview is so raw. You know, there's a part of that thing where, he'd just been relieved as a drill instructor. Then he's awarded the Navy Cross with all the fanfare that goes with it, and now he's a celebrity for the very thing that he thinks he failed at, which is three of his Marines were killed. And I was talking, when you kill 24 insurgents, you probably wounded 50, right? And then a bunch of them got away.
Oh, yeah.
So his patrol, I think, was either eight or ten Marines, something like that. And that's what kind of fighting they did. They took on 100 guys, ambushed them, and they fought their asses off. And he did that. He directed most of it. But what does he focus on? What does he live with? And at one point he says, I don't want this. I don't need this. All I want is those three guys back. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about what could I have done differently. And you hear that, and it freezes you about, what you live with as a small unit leader. After a war, and in this particular case, we're talking him being decorated with the second highest award the nation gives out, and that there's still that baggage with that. I think it's for all those reasons and his courage in terms of sharing it, pretty cool, pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
What about
good guy.
Yeah. What about your weekend? What did you do over the weekend? Anything exciting? You went to a funeral and a wedding. You went to a funeral and a wedding in the same day. How was that?
The funeral was fantastic. Great guy, and lived a great life. The wedding was our neighbor's granddaughter, who basically they raised her. So we've known her since we've moved here. She's a good gal. It was just a good time. Real good time.
So the funeral was good. And then the wedding was good.
Yeah. Right. You know, it's funny is, I made a comment to some friends of ours that were at the wedding, neighbors and stuff. We were talking about something. We said, we went to a wedding we went to a funeral today too. And they're like, oh wow. That's crazy. And I said, I'd rather go to funerals than weddings. And he was laughing like, what? And I said, seriously, funerals are better because people are really themselves. They're real people at that point. The sorrow, someone's life, you're commemorating, you're saying, you're doing good things for someone, how they lived as a person. So you hear really good stories. Weddings, on the other hand, for me are a pain in the ass because really it comes down to is, everybody's really subjective. Everybody complains about the food or the weight or this or that. And it's just, it was the same thing. I mean, think of how many weddings you've been to and they're just always the same, always the same thing said, same corny songs played, But in the end, like I said, I like funerals better because People are really themselves. Yeah.
I don't know that I would choose. I think it's more my experience at either has to do with how many of my friends are at either one. You know, so if I don't know anybody, you know, it's just standing around kind of watching. But, like, I've been to a couple funerals here in the last month, and I've known a bunch of people at each one of them, and they've been awesome. They've been fun. Go and see, you know, friends and hang out, and, you know, and then afterwards you're hanging out with them and spend the day with them. And it's like,
right.
I love going to funerals. I get to see my friends now. That sounds like an old person, but, I mean, it is what it is, man. It is what it is. And it's, you know, you get to see your friends. They all, a lot of them show up. And so again, it depends on the guest list, you know, depends on the guest list.
Yeah.
So.
And you don't have to bring, you don't have to worry about, did I get the right gift at a funeral? There is no gift. You know, and most funerals, people bring food, you know, afterwards. So everybody brings a dish. So it's homemade and it's good. It's wholesome, good food. Whereas a wedding, it's some caterer, again, some guy who, you get the chicken and it's cold, or you get a little bit of vegetables. You just get a little bit of that and got sauce on. I mean, it's prepared the same way for everybody. Well, I don't like sauce on my chicken. You know, or I like a different type of fillet of fish than this.
Come on, who goes to a wedding and bitches about the food?
Everybody does.
Oh my God, just shut it then, really? Come on. I mean, you know how much that costs those people? It's like weddings aren't cheap.
I know, that's just it.
It's like, shut up.
Funerals are cheaper.
Yeah. They are.
Again. You know, another reason why to like funerals than weddings.
Yeah, you look at the father and, you know, the people that pay for the wedding, you're like, sorry about that, man.
Yeah, and the thing about funerals is no one's there taking pictures of everybody. You know, the table picture, the guy comes and takes a picture of the table. The toast. No one toasts at a funeral. You don't have to listen to the corny toast. Or the goofy best man give a speech.
Oh my God!
Who doesn't know how to give a speech?
And they're horrible, absolutely horrible,
ridiculously bad.
Yeah, it's like you feel bad.
You can't stories about how they used to play as kids, and you're like, whatever. Funerals, they tell stories about how much of a practical joker he was.
Right.
You know,
right.
Again, another reason why I like funerals better than people.
Yeah. No, you hear like the best man or the maid of honor stand up and like, well, I was going to prepare something, but I'm just going to speak from the heart. And you're like, oh, here we go.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Always prepare something, okay? All right.
Yeah.
Never more than 120 seconds, okay? Always prepare something.
Especially, some of those speeches at the weddings can go forever, and they just have no content to them.
Right.
They're just... Yeah.
Right. Okay. And they should be humorous and they should be relatively short. There you go. So if you're going to give one.
Funerals.
Yes.
When someone gives that speech at a funeral, there's meaning behind it.
Yeah.
You can learn from that. You walk away as a better person. You're like, man, you know, that's how I'd like to be remembered. You know, so I told Tina at the wedding, at the funeral, you know, they had the pictures up, slideshows of pictures of when he was younger and his family and all that stuff. Like, they normally do a funeral, right?
Yes.
You know, and I said, here's what I want to do. I want to do it different at mine. I said, don't have any, if you enter the slideshow, don't have any photographs of me or my friends or stuff that I did. Because the people that are there that experience that, those are experiences and memories that they'll always have. And those are good. You don't have to put those up in front of them. But what I want you to put up there is things that I like. Just like pictures of food and guns and girls and places and
Red
cars.
Sox.
And
the Red Sox? Red Sox pictures?
The Red Sox. Yeah. You know, things that I liked.
No, I don't, I don't like that. Like, why do I want to look at that?
Because then you can say, man, that guy had good taste.
That's not what you do at a funeral. You put pictures up of you. Right, they dissolve.
No, that's why I want to.
They dissolve, you know, and you put that Barbra Streisand on. Memories. Here's Mike in a diaper on a trike. Right.
Yeah.
Here's Mike getting arrested by the police in Minneapolis when he stepped on his brakes and he thought he was getting away at night. Here's Mike.
I want. I want laughter at my funeral.
Well, then, I think you need to do the eulogy. And him, I'll help you record it. And all right, boys and girls, if you're here, I'm dead. So welcome to my funeral. Right? You just bust balls on everybody. All right, first of all, I know this guy's here. So stand up. All right, now sit down. Right? You can just tell funny story on top of funny story. So here's the deal. I'm evidently going to go get put in the ground someplace. All right? And we're going to have a party. Okay? And
maybe I should do that. That'd be fun. Because then I'd invite some of these guys. And I'd be like, okay, Troy, I know you're out there. Stand up, Troy.
Stand up, Troy.
All right. Those that are looking at Troy right now, Troy and I were young Marines together. I told him I would never tell him the story. I'd take it to my grave. Well, I'm in my grave. And now I'm telling the story. So here it is.
Mike, how Troy? Funny would that be?
Yeah.
People would
that
be
that time in Singapore when you took off with that transvestite and came back and told everybody that, dude, that guy was a girl. It turned out to be a girl. You should have never told us that. Well, now I'm telling everybody. And if Troy's wife's there, I'm sorry, but that happened before you, Melissa, and I'm fine for that.
All right, and then you do this. Hey, is Larry Wilcox here? Stand up. And everybody looks around. Larry Wilcox stands out. All right, everybody, I don't want him at my funeral. Okay, could you get him out of here right now? give his fat ass the bum's rush right out of here.
Yeah.
And then, everybody stands up and like, you got to leave, man.
Come Carl on. Smith, please stand up. You're next. Okay, hey, Carl, reach in your wallet and give my wife the $100 that you owed me for the last 22 years.
And you go down the list. All right, now that I've got everything straight, I got a few words of guidance for everybody, okay? And then you can you give your own little sermon, and then you tell Megan and Tina how awesome they are, and you ask Megan, hey, by the way, have you washed your car? Because I told you to do that last week. I hope you did.
Yeah.
All right. Because now I'm in my grave and I'm not going to be able to do it for you. So, right, you make them laugh and then you're like, all right, I'm out. Gunner, Musselman, see ya. And then, we put on the outro music. You got to choose that. And then it's off to the party. And everybody could walk out of there.
That's a good idea.
That shit was hilarious, man. That was funny. Yeah. Do your own eulogy. So, what are they going to say about you? Oh, Mike Musselman, the best men I ever knew.
Well, you didn't know many. That's what my answer would say.
Right. You didn't know many? You get out much? Right?
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
The Mike Musselman. Okay, this is what I would say. Mike Musselman, first thing you need to know about him. Rule breaker. Okay. If he's following the rules, it's because he doesn't need to break any of them yet. Okay. Number two, smarter than most of you guys, although he won't act like it. Three, if you embarrass him or try to go against him in public, he will break it off in your ass. Okay. You won't even know it hit you most of the time because he'll hurricane you with that stuff. So it would be something like that. And then you have to tell funny stories.
I better be careful because if I make it sound too good, then people are going to be wanting me to die soon because they really want to go to
They want to go standing room only to see Larry Wilcox get the bum's rush out of the funeral. Hey.
Yeah.
I've been promoting that. Do your own eulogy. I think it's a good thing. Like, who do you want? You want some, yo-yo standing up there? Like, well, come on. Come on, make
let
it
me
a
tell you a story about Gunner.
He came into the shop one day. He was kind of glum, and I said, "What's wrong with you, son?"
Yeah.
And I cheered him
now
right up.
Maybe
and
I don't.
Then he kissed me on the mouth, and I was like, "Where's this going, Mike?" He said, "I'm Italian. This is how we do it." So who needs a story like that at their funeral? Everybody disturbed by that?
Right.
Right.
Let's make funerals fun. So that's a national movement.
Yeah, that's
everybody
what I'm saying.
Start writing their, yeah.
We'll start a company, right?
We should help you prepare for your passing.
We'll call them funerals, We put the fun back in funeral.
Hey, that's why they name them carnivals. Funerals, carnivals, funerals.
Mm? Exactly. It's spelled the same way. F-U-N-E-R. We put the fun in funeral. That's right.
Yeah.
Give us a call. We'll show you how to do it. And we're not talking about bouncy things either. Although you could have a bouncy thing if you really wanted it, but I don't think so. We put the fun in funeral. So, anyway. All right, what do you got going today? Anything exciting?
No. I'm going to catch a little bit of the... Well, I don't think I'm going to watch any more World Cup. I'm done with that.
So you're done with the World Cup?
Well, today. So, like I said, this week France plays the game. England plays Belgium on Thursday. Great game.
That'll be huge.
Yeah.
The English hooligans will be out beating up everybody. The belt. Yeah. All the what are the bells called? They're not called bells.
Flems.
The Flems? The Flemish?
Yeah.
All right.
Flemish.
All right. So the Flemish are going to get beat. Or beat up, one of the two. Or both. Okay, anything else going on?
Belgian waffles come from Belgium.
Okay.
That's one of the mysteries in life.
One of those mysteries? I don't know. Here's a quote. Can you tell me what's behind this? Here is some advice. It is better to remain silent and be thought of as
You read that. I put that out there.
As a fool, then open one's mouth and remove all doubt. Explain to me.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
No, that was meant for somebody. I'm not going to mention their name. Once again, they open their mouth and they just prove without a shadow of doubt, convicted by every circuit court in the nation, that they are a fool. And, that's my advice. You know, just, hey, and I didn't want to call them out. And I just, once again, I just set it out there. And, you know, but the reply I got was, well done. You're right.
You got a reply from them?
Well done.
Ooh. Wow. So you sent kind of a non-naming, very civil message.
Yeah.
And they actually understood it and said, well done?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often. Because most of the time, you people that you aim that at, they're like oblivious to it.
Yeah. And every once in a while, you need to be grounded.
Right.
You know?
Put
your grounding boots on and your gloves, ground them.
Interesting. From a guy who was shocked by electricity and almost had his brain scrambled because of it. Now learning.
Yeah. Those are, you know, not every meeting, not every staff meeting did I say something, because a lot of times I was quiet. And people would say that, like afterwards, like, Gunner, I would have thought you would have said something there. And I looked at him and said, Chief, sometimes it's best to be remain silent and be thought of as a fool, then open one's mouth and then remove all doubt. And
you know,
look at me like,
I've been told that that's attributed to Abraham Lincoln. Do you know the origin of that quote?
No, I don't. I don't know. I thought I was the first one to do it, but I guess you say I'm not. So I'll take that for whatever it's worth. I don't know the origin of it. I don't know.
Hold on, let me
see. You know, I know it's really good statesmen, guys that, you know, I put it this way. I think people that we look up to practice that a lot. So, and I think more and more people should do that. Like, especially today, what's going on in the world today.
Oh, my God, it's horrible. I was talking about that. You know, over the course of the weekend, you know, you have Sarah Sanders that, you know, gets, you know, essentially told to leave a restaurant. So because we don't like what you think, we don't like the policies.
You've got to think what we think. That's the mentality of today.
The director of Homeland Security's house is surrounded. You know, I mean, to me, and the danger of this is when the crazies get involved. Then what? Somebody going to shoot somebody? Set your watch. And
Well, then the crazies on the other side would say, "Well, they got it. They had it coming." In the world are you talking about?
Yeah, and Mike, I kind of dovetailed that with the passing of Charles Krauthammer and played, some of the things he said. I mean, he is the antithesis of that. He is a thoughtful, respectful commentator on things.
Yeah. Having an argument, a meaningful intellectual argument. You know, I would have loved to have met that guy in real life.
Yeah, me too. He liked baseball. We could have hung out with him.
Yeah. I mean, he was, in my eyes, you know, again, what journalism should be.
Right.
He's what politicians should practice. You know, you really can't say he was a kind of a, you know, if you look at him, he went at both parties. He wasn't a party guy. He was a truth speaker, you know?
Oh, there's the T word again. You know, that thing raises its head. And, and not afraid to tell the truth. And we've talked about this on this program, hearing people that tell the truth, and it stops you. And you had, who was that? Maxine Brown Waters encouraging people that were doing, you know, surrounding the, you know, Secretary of Homeland Defense's house, you know, went in after her when she was eating in a restaurant, Sarah Sanders. And then I don't know if this is true, but I saw something go across my scroller that said Nancy Pelosi rebuked her for it. And my jaw almost hit the table like, what? So, but again, it's the overheated nature that the 24-hour news cycle promotes stands in direct contradiction to guys like Charles Krauthammer and their articulate discourse, their articulate dissent, and the way they contributed to the debate in a way that it's just hard. We don't see it very much anymore, and it's pathetic. So anyway, on that somber note. All right, man.
Yeah.
Any big plans? Doing anything else crazy? No?
No, not today.
All right, it's
raining today, so that was good though.
It's been hot there, yes?
Today was kind of nice. But yeah, if you think 100 is hot, I don't. I just think it was nice. It was okay. I mean, I'm not going to go out there and goof around out in the sun.
Right. 100 and how much humidity?
People say, I don't think there's any humidity here. I don't feel it. But I hear people say that it is humid. And I kind of look around and again, it's like, you don't get out much, do you?
And you've been to hot places, you've been to humid places, so you would say not so much?
Yeah, where insects leave contrails when they fly.
That's the truth. That's right.
And it slows their speed down because they can't fly through that thick, wet air. So, yeah. It's just amazing. It's amazing to me.
Well, I don't know if I can agree with you, though, because I just checked the humidity. All right, right now, the humidity, current temperature in Granbury, Texas, 87 degrees under fair sky. The wind chill sits at 93 degrees. The humidity sits at 57%. That's relatively humid. And so here's what it is at 29 Palms where it's not humid. So I'll give you the humidity level at 29 Palms. 29 Palms, 91 degrees, feels like 91. Humidity sitting at 13%. So I think by that definition, big man, either you've adjusted to the humidity or you don't really know what humidity is.
Well, my scale of it is, like I said, I don't like that scale because it stops at 100%, and some of the places I've been to are well above 100% humidity.
Got it. I'm with you.
I mean, literally, where you walk out, you got to take a shower every time you walk outside.
Sauna. You're sweating as soon as you get out of the shower, you're drying off, you're sweating.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Just the way you, right. All right, man. Have a great day. We have to. I'll give you a call later. Right, we have to decide on our next gun talk topic.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. See you, Mike.
Bye.
Himself, Mr. World Cup himself, Michael Christopher Musselman. I've tried. That'll do it. My challenge to everybody today is a couple, exemplified by kind of the theme of the show. What is an overall concern about the direction of the nation? We need leaders that solve problems, not that aren't that won't go to D.C. and just maintain it. And if Donald Trump's election doesn't tell you anything, it's that people in this country are not looking for more of the same. They want people to go there and solve problems. So one is a concern that our country continues to drift in the wrong direction. Two, civil discourse, as exemplified by Charles Krauthammer. If you're out and about driving, dial up some of his stuff and read some of his columns. You can go online and you can find compilations of his best columns and things like that. Read them. Brilliant man. But I think we should all aspire to be, elements of what he was. Awesome guy. And then the other thing I would tell you is one of the great healing events for people that go through trauma is helping others. Is beginning to help others. So, in the spirit of Jeremiah Workman, giving back, helping others. Don't be afraid to give back. Don't be afraid to give back. It'll help you deal with your own stuff. On that note, All Marine Radio on a Monday is over and out.